The year opened with big discussions on the future of Ukraine, from Abu Dhabi to Geneva, and between the World Economic Forum in Davos and the Munich Security Conference, the question is on how Ukraine can come out of Russia's war. No one seems to have the answer. But beneath the politics, and apart from the long-standing goal of lasting peace, the question lingers, particularly for the millions of internally displaced Ukrainians and those living under temporary protection in Europe. Marking the fourth year since the full-scale invasion, we put the spotlight again today on what ICMPD is doing as a response to this situation of uncertainty. Joining us today are two of our colleagues working on the Ukraine project. Roman Makukha manages some of our projects from the Vienna headquarters. Roman, hi, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Mike, thank you for having me.
And joining from our Ukrainian Consultation Center in Prague is Anna Kornitska, who's one of our UCC coordinators. Hi, Anna, thank you for joining all the way and taking the time today.
Hi, everyone, my name is Anna Kornitska. Thank you for having us today, and hi, our dear listeners.
Thank you. Welcome to the podcast. And Roman, let me start with you, and I'll probably ask a very basic question. What do we know about the situation of Ukrainians who are still in the country?
Ukraine is now in a very tough security situation. There has been a significant rise in the use of the long-range missiles and drones, and we can record that nearly 14,000 launched by Russia in the past year alone. So Russia has systematically targeted energy and heating systems, particularly during the winter months, so to say, to weaponize the cold. And we can recall the major assaults in the beginning of February when Russia launched some of the largest aerial attacks of the year that had a tremendous impact on utilities. So we know that in Kyiv alone, it's around 2,600 additional buildings lost heating following the February airstrikes. In Odessa, severe damage of the power facility left more than 300,000 of residents without running water in mid-February. So the overall energy crisis led to daily outages lasting for up to 14 hours in some regions, cutting off essential services like water and heating. Remains to be at a critical situation. Currently, around 4.6 internally displaced persons in Ukraine and nearly 7 million refugees abroad. We see that over 12.7 million people, roughly one-third of the population of Ukraine, require urgent humanitarian assistance. At the same time, life continues. And you can see that the government of Ukraine is working, the parliament is working, the industries are working, and that moving all to recovery already, where the last year or the day before there were airstrikes, the workers are already rebuilding the infrastructure. So life goes on, but it's very, very difficult.
Thank you, Roman, for that very comprehensive introduction to life in Ukraine. Do we still have projects running inside Ukraine?
Yes, we do. Of course, we would like to mention that ICMPD is implementing the EU-funded project to support the resilience of Ukraine's border institutions, border guards and customs service. This project covered equipment procurement needs for border security, trade facilitation, and here we're talking about tailor-made vehicle-based thermovisual surveillance complexes, canine team trainings, procurement of capacity building. So we received highly positive feedback from the beneficiaries of this project. Recently, in December, we had a training on risk analysis for the representatives of the State Migration Service, the Border Guard Service, on raising their capacities in risk analysis and managing migration better.
Indeed, just a couple of weeks back at the Munich Security Conference, Ukraine was also a big topic, as it was since the full-scale invasion. So just to shift our focus a little bit, tell us about the current situation of Ukrainians within the region.
By the end of December 2025, we have the official statistics that says that approximately 4.3 non-EU citizens who fled Ukraine had temporary protection in the European Union. The top three countries that host the majority of Ukrainians under temporary protection are Germany, Poland, and the Czech Republic. Whereas in Germany, we have 1.2 million of beneficiaries. In Poland is almost 950,000 of beneficiaries, and in Czechia almost 373,000 of beneficiaries of the temporary protection.
What about vulnerable groups? What do we know about them?
When we're talking about the vulnerable groups, we can say that we observe, specifically as the clients of our centers, we saw a lot of elderly people who are coming to us for information, for support and help. And we also observe a number of people with disabilities.
You mentioned earlier that Poland, the Czech Republic, and Germany currently host most of the holders of temporary protection status. As you're managing our projects across these three different countries, multiple cities, what would you say are the more common or even the new challenges, the emerging issues that Ukrainians are facing since we opened our Ukrainian consultation centers?
Absolutely, the things changed. When people came, they were trying to find answers to the immediate questions. What do they need? Where the places where to live, where to accommodate their kids, how to go to school, where to find the kindergartens. And now what we see throughout the couple of years that we are operating our Ukrainian consultation centers is that the questions got deeper and more complex because our centers not only provide information on all issues related to temporary protection, but also we are working very closely with the Ukrainian consulates abroad. And whenever people are coming to us, they also ask questions about the Ukrainian legislation, because any change in the legislation, and these changes in the legislation impact their lives. And for that reason, we are trying to cover all these questions. And the combination of the legal requirements of the hosting countries, as well as the requirements from Ukrainian legislation, we try to support the holders of the temporary protection in answering these questions. For example, people are starting asking not only about the jobs, but also about the taxation. Some of them keep working online, and that requires the double taxation.
Taxation in their host countries or taxation back in Ukraine?
Both, because they could be employed online in Ukraine and they are still working partially or part-time in the hosting countries. And they want to be in line with the law, and that requires a little bit deeper knowledge about that.
Before I turn to Anna, let me just have a follow-up. How different are the situations between, say, the Ukrainian consultation center in Prague, in Berlin, or Gdansk, how they manage their personal bureaucracies with respect to their employment?
The legislation of the countries the Ukrainians are in is different. And what we can say that in some countries there's a different approach on labor market integration, whereas, for example, in Poland we have the approach work first, that places refugees directly in employment and pairs the jobs entry and on-the-job language acquisition. But in other countries like Germany, there is a high demand for the language-first approach. And that dictates a little bit the overall situation. When we see the Ukrainians' labor integration in EU member states, we can see that whereas in Poland we observe around 60% of labor market integration, and that was underlined in the study of ICMPD on labor market integration for displaced Ukrainian women. In Germany, it was around 20-25%. And that gives a perspective of different approaches at various national states. And we can understand that every EU member state is different and every person's need is different.
Anna, let me get a little more specific on the discussion at this point, since you're managing the Prague UCC. What can you tell us about the situation of Ukrainians in the Czech Republic based on your experience, the kind of conversations you have with them?
Yeah, so as Roman already had mentioned, the Czech Republic definitely hosts one of the highest numbers of displaced Ukrainians per capita in the European Union, meaning that we do have the biggest minority of Ukrainians in the Czech Republic. Given this information, we do understand that the integration into a labor market is like going on really dynamically. We do see the questions of housing that is currently in place for Ukrainians and so on. We see the other different ongoing challenges that we have, let's say, families that are divided. For example, the young mother that is trying to balance between the childcare and the employment here, or elderly individuals who are facing the problems with the digital services or the bureaucracy that everyone is facing when they are abroad and in their hosting countries. Definitely the questions are different, but what do I see the difference from when I started working at the UCC in the early 2023? That people firstly came to seek for immediate help at the very moment, like how to register, how to get the humanitarian aid first one, where to find the housing, the flat for rent. However, right now it's typically different. People are looking for long-term planning. They are looking for better jobs. They are looking for integrations. I would rather say that people are seeking for more clarity for their future, for their legal future, for their professional future, for their personal future. So it definitely is different right now.
Last year, when we did a podcast episode with our colleagues Violeta and Magda, Magda talked about the huge diversity of these issues, of these challenges. And it can be quite tricky navigating, as you said, bureaucracies in a new country. What have been some examples that you can share with us that made you think they really need us?
Oh, I can tell that there are a lot of such examples. We are navigating between the different topics currently. We typically are helping people on the various stages of their problems and of various situations they do have. That could be starting from a mother who wants to get the birth certificate or the acquisition of the citizenship of Ukraine, and ending by like help for elderly people struggling with the digitalization, with the pension services that are provided in Ukraine. We have such stories when our clients are already people who are just coming to talk, especially elderly people who are seeking just like for opportunity to speak to someone in their native language, to have a cup of tea or coffee with us, and just to feel safe. And this is what actually the UCC is trying to give them.
And of course, in the last 3 years since we have been running the UCCs, naturally, there would be a trajectory between how their concerns were back then as opposed to what they are now. And so what I want to ask is, when they talk to you about possibilities to transition to a different visa status within the European Union, how do they frame these questions to you? Do they simply ask them flatly, or do they also come with a background?
I would rather say that that would depend on the person, because each individual has a different approach for sure. But typically people are coming because they trust us. So they do understand that when they are coming to us to seek for help, they don't need to hide anything. We are flexible, we are open, and actually a lot of our colleagues are the people who were unfortunate to flee because of the full-scale invasion. So we know the stories, we know how hard it is being the Ukrainians abroad or anybody who is living outside of their home country, how it is. How to navigate through this sea of bureaucracy, tons of documents and the specificities in legislations, how still to be flexible at that time, that you need to understand how to work out in the environment that is new for you currently. So typically people are coming and telling their stories. They are sharing what they are facing, and sometimes they are coming for emergency help at the same time. We're trying to give a hand wherever we can, and we are trying to be as open as it is, because this is one of our priorities.
Well, I can imagine it's all very diverse. No single person comes with the same question probably as the person before. But just to paint a mental picture, could you run us through your typical working day?
We definitely start from checking out on the, are there any legislation changes? We are always keeping on the track what is going on. We are reading that, we are also having the social media channels on Facebook and Telegram that gives us a broader picture on the concerns of our clients, as well as that helps us to navigate and to understand the possible trends, what the clients are going to come with. We are also working to organize some informational campaigns on our social networks for people to be prepared for the future changes or the future updates. Also, we're planning and doing some information session with the local or international experts to help people to navigate throughout the complications that they can face in the hosting country. As Roman mentioned, like we are working in the different on the double taxation. On double taxation is also the question that people are coming to us with. So we do understand that it's also, we were doing some informational post on that. Typically, we do for sure everyday work with the clients. We are trying to keep on track on different targeted groups like Ukrainians in Czech Republic, and to see what people are looking for. We are following up to the clients because we do understand that people sometimes are not, like when we are giving them the advices, we want to understand either did it help or not. We want to see the feedback from them, what was more helpful or what would they see as a more beneficial for them in different situations. So we're following up with the clients. We do go on different like trainings. We either are organizing the trainings ourselves for different NGOs on Ukrainian specificities of documents, or we are going to different trainings organized by the local institutions to get the more expertise in what we are doing relating the temporary protection or the newest changes. We are discussing with different organizations, the different diaspora organizations, what challenges they are facing right now. Because if we want to navigate well here, we do need to cooperate with them. So we need to understand what are the updates in other organizations, what are the new services that they can provide that our clients can benefit from, our clients can ask us on. So this is how it typically looks like. Tons of coffee. We are answering emails, answering on social media, getting up the phone calls, and having the clients in the office.
Well, I should learn Ukrainian and come over and help you out.
You're more than welcome.
Anna, this sounds like a lot of work in a single day, and I don't think a whole day is enough to call it a day. How big is your team in Prague?
Currently, we're going to be 6, and as the center is transforming, we do understand that we are lucky to have 2 more experts in different areas that can contribute to the UCC. I can say that each of us has a bit of a different expertise. We have one colleague who has been working in the consulate, meaning that he can also contribute to the question that relates to the consulate. We have the colleague who is currently working a lot with the cases on family reunion or, unfortunately, cases on divorces and so on. She does know how to operate this family-related law. We have the colleague, she is amazing in organizing events and events planning, networking planning. She does know a lot of people. I would call myself just being the local manager and sometimes a shoulder to cry on, sometimes a person to shout at when you are overstressed, and trying to be everything for the colleagues. We are a pretty good team made up of different people with different characters and different expertise.
And I would also imagine there's an element of psychosocial support to the kind of engagement that you have with our clients, especially those coming with distressing issues or very serious problems that they would need your help on.
Yeah, we do have different like categories of people coming to us for sure. Like, let's say recently we had the growth in amount of the clients of the elderly people coming to us. We do also have different people who have some like psychological stress right now, either from because they fled from Ukraine or because the living abroad is not also the easiest thing to manage. The only thing we can do, we can communicate with them, we can help them to navigate legally. However, as long as it comes to like psychosocial help, we typically do refer to the professionals. We do have a wide range of contacts on the local psychologists, on the organization that are providing different type of psychological support, because we do understand that like it is hard to be facing such situations.
Thanks, Anna. Roman, let me turn to you. We do have a call center in Warsaw. Could you talk to us about how this operates?
The call center in Warsaw is one of the centers, and the type of work is a little bit different. While in other UCCs, we have three types of consultations, which are in-person consultations, online consultations via email or social media, and telephone consultations. The call center in Warsaw receives the calls from all over the world. The geography of these calls is really significant. People are calling us from Australia, Canada, New Zealand, from the occupied territories, of course, from Ukraine and so on. And approximately per month, we have from four to five thousand of calls. The type of work there is pretty specific. Since the call center is located at the premises of the Ukrainian consulate in Warsaw, that allows us a direct access to the consuls in the most urgent and critical situations. And these situations happen pretty a lot. And for example, we had the cases where people just lost their documents. We had the cases when people were calling the emergency line of the consulate because of some accidents, unfortunately, or people were deceased, and that required lots of questions on the documents. We had cases when people with psychosocial disorders were calling, or their relatives from Ukraine were calling to find out where their relatives are in Poland. And that creates some type of very special situation.
So these are all reactive type of responses. Do we also have anything proactive being done out of these call centers? Do we also get queries, as Anna was explaining, in terms of job placements or universities or kindergartens for their children? Considering Warsaw is the capital, so I would imagine that's where many of our Ukrainian colleagues are living in.
We've accumulated a large amount of data for the last 3 years of the function of the Ukrainian consultation centers. When we see the spikes of certain type of requests, we're trying to capture these requests with the information session. And this is a little bit proactive approach. We saw the spikes of the requests that were immediate result of some changes in the legislation. We try to inform and track these situations. We have approximately across all the centers up to 20 to 30% of those people are socially vulnerable beneficiaries of the temporary protection. Basically, temporary protection was the most frequent topic, and followed by the administrative services and public services, social services. What we see overall, the data indicates that the gradual shift from the predominantly temporary protection administrative issues towards the integration-related issues and institutional procedures in the hosting countries. And we are talking here about the job search. As Anna rightly mentioned, we now see even those people who are coming to us proudly saying that, look, I passed the language test. Now I would like to update my CV and apply for that jobs. We are happy about that, people that are striving despite all the odds. And they are asking us, like, can you check if I put this application correctly? And we see this gradual shift into the professional environment of the hosting country. We see the shift of their own attitude while they were lost a little bit when they came, and that makes us pretty happy.
Anna, let me turn to you and get a little more specific about your engagements with our Ukrainians in the Czech Republic. What do you typically hear particularly from Ukrainian women in terms of looking for the right opportunities or the challenges that they're facing? What do you hear from our clients at the UCC in Prague?
What is important to mention, that analyzing the statistical data that is officially provided by the Czech government, is that 70% of working-aged Ukrainians are working legally in the Czech Republic. And that's really important to know down. What comes to the areas where women are typically working in the Czech Republic, I can say that that would be somewhere in the care system or hospitality, sometimes in the retails. However, I would also say that the Labor Office of the Czech Republic is doing an amazing job by helping Ukrainians, first of all, finding their job, second of all, providing tons of requalification courses as well as language courses. We do know a lot of programs that Czech Republic is providing the services for anyone with a legal status in the Czech Republic. At the same time, we do see that Czechia was opened for Ukrainians. The Czech Republic was ready to get a lot of workforce that they can benefit from. And this is also what we can see, that the local government is supporting the integration in the local labor market as well. So qualification is still ongoing. Diploma recognition process is longer than they would need to pass some different extra exams that are like country specific rather, or the qualification could be slightly different. However, people can, like, the government is helping to navigate through this process, as well as there were programs supporting people to have their diploma recognition in the Czech Republic. It's still ongoing. So people are, like, Ukrainians in the Czech Republic are definitely entering the labor market strongly, quickly, and we can see that on the everyday life.
Well, it is an ongoing story, and we can only see positive developments out of this in having Ukrainians integrated into the system. But both you and Roman mentioned earlier that there have been some success stories. Is there any sort of aftercare service or follow-through engagement that we have for our clients at the centers?
I do remember once there was a lady coming to us, a single mother, which is actually the very typical client of ours, like profile of a client of ours is a single mother coming with a child, looking for in the beginning where her child can go to school. Then solving her housing issues was a question for her. Then later on, she came with question of employment when she already has passed some Czech language courses. She wanted to start working in the Czech Republic. And later on, as she was evolving, as her life was changing in the Czech Republic, we have seen the questions she came with to us were different. And that's really interesting to overview that people are changing. And actually, she came to us this time. She didn't want to solve anything. She came with a cake, and that was really nice of her. But at the same time, we are also collecting the feedbacks from the client. We are never asking them to fill them in. However, if they are telling us, like, how can we thank you? What can we do for you for, like, helping us? We always can share that there is a feedback form. People, please feel free, if you feel so, to fill it in. We are following up on the clients only if they are asking us to do so. We cannot collect their personal information. We cannot collect their mobile phone numbers and so on. We do strictly follow the GDPR rules. We can see it by the feedback when they are coming back to us, or also how we can see whether we were helpful or not is in our registration form. We do have the note that we are trying to, we do have the field called "How did you get to know about us?" And we pretty often have the answers like, "You were recommended by a friend, relative, colleague, and so on." And this is how we can see whether we were helpful. If we helped the person and then the person recommended us, then we are doing what we had to do.
Well, for sure, you're doing a fantastic job. And when you hear this very positive feedback from our clients who come to say that they have been successful and you have been very helpful, how does that make you feel?
Being the expert myself, I would say that I would be happy if when I moved here, there was such a center. So this actually giving me the understanding that I can support the locals here. I can be the hand when they need us. We can help them to navigate. We can help them planning the longer perspective of their life in the Czech Republic. We do understand that the legislation can change, but still there will be Ukrainians who will need the support of ours, not only the vulnerable categories. Just sometimes to come to drink the herbal tea with us is also help.
That's very heartwarming. And I should have asked this earlier, Anna, and I'm just curious, how did you find your way to the UCC, actually?
My way to the UCC was a pretty interesting one, because we got to know with Roman a bit earlier than I started to work there. I came from the civil society sector. I am active in a lot of Ukrainian-related demonstrations, panel discussions, movie screening, and so on. Being either like the host there or supporting, organizing them, And this is how actually I realized that there is such a center and it is opened. We got acquainted with Roman a bit earlier, but then we have met and talked a bit more on the official opening of the UCC in Prague. This is how I applied, and here I am right now talking together with Roman.
Of course, given your background, it's fascinating that you do have the full understanding of the pulse of the concerns, the issues, the challenges of Ukrainians. But we will again talk about this a little bit later, because I'm going to shift to a slightly more serious matter. Recently, we have been receiving a lot of inquiries from the media specifically. Of course, apart from the questions on temporary protection, what happens after March 2027, which we'll also be talking about later. But some of these questions are very specific on the arrivals since last summer of young Ukrainian men. Why is this particularly very important?
approximately from 5 to 15% of those who are coming to our centers as recorded as new arrivals are young men from 18 to 22. We cannot say that this is a huge number and that usually is in line with the overall dynamics of the migration that we see specifically, which is triggered by the changes in the legislation and the deterioration of the situation. You know that the educational establishments, vocational training centers, they are being under shellings, under attacks, and the education is one of the key points that Ukraine is struggling to restore in full capacity. For that reason, for these young men, these opportunities to keep studying, to learn new language, to get some new skills is an opportunity. In personal conversations with the counselors of our centers, but what we saw that young people are coming really to study, to learn something new, and for them this is a new opportunity.
Right. And Anna, for us at the Prague Center, we've also been handling many of these media requests. So I'd like to turn to you and ask perhaps about the kind of consultations and conversations you have with these young men. What worries them, how they view the situation. Of course, they're young. Most of them probably came to the Czech Republic for the first time.
I do believe that the situation is pretty similar in all around the Europe, where like the young men are coming. What also I want to add, except of the studying, like some of the men are telling that I want to enter the university, I want to get the better qualifications, I want. Others are coming to reunite with the family, if their mother is here, or if there was a father who already has been living for many years in the Czech Republic and they want finally to be together. And the third probably reason what we are hearing from them why they are coming is job looking. I'm not saying that there is no job in Ukraine. However, it's pretty complicated right now to find the appropriate qualification qualified job. And this is once again why when I want to refer to the official statistics that these people are like workingly active. So either they are coming to find a better opportunity for the living, but at the same time they are always saying that it's not safe in Ukraine. It is not. Unfortunately, we do see it from the everyday statistics and information on the shelling in Ukraine, and that's why they want just to feel safe. And this is every human right to feel safe.
Thank you, Anna. Well, speaking of opportunity, last year we opened two new UCCs in Germany, one in Düsseldorf and one in Munich, which I would assume is proof that indeed the demand is growing, the need is growing. And as we've just talked about, we have more clients coming into the UCCs. Is this also aligned with what you see as part of the continued surge of the Ukrainians into the EU?
We saw indeed that in the last year, I think the number of the holders of the temporary protection, specifically in Germany, increased. And there is, of course, a need for assistance for more than 1,200,000 people who are living there. Why Munich and Düsseldorf? So they are the capitals of the Bundesländer that receive also the majority of Ukrainians, which are Bavaria and North Rhine-Westphalia. And there the number of Ukrainians are really a lot. For that reason, I do see when we opened the center in Düsseldorf, we were in touch with the local authorities and they welcomed this initiative and the same as in Munich. And they said, we will try to support you because we also see this need here. And together with the local authorities, we opened the center at the same location where at the first days of war, there was an information point. So that gave us the really good visibility. When people started coming to us, they already knew that at that point, there was the information point. And this, I would say, this is a win-win game. For the local authorities, this is where we stand in this combination that we work not only with local authorities, we work with Ukrainian consulates.
Well, of course, there's always this growth of the demand, considering the war is still going on. But there's also this looming question, particularly to temporary protection, how long it will be after March 2027. Now, our colleague Martin Wagner released a policy brief last year outlining several future pathways under discussion in the EU for what can happen after the end of the current temporary protection for Ukrainians in March of next year. As we look ahead, what can we say about temporary protection at this stage?
The main objective is, of course, the lasting peace. And we all hope that the peace agreement comes soon. But this is a big unknown that drives uncertainties. I would not stop a lot on the ways out of the temporary protection because this is a decision, the political decision that needs to be taken at the EU level. But what is the main focus right now and what the focus should be is on the consolidation of our efforts together with the EU member states, with Ukrainian stakeholders and other organizations on the preparations for return, where the main aim is protection of Ukraine's human capital. Also, ICMPD's support to policy framework development in Ukraine is also a key component here. And you know that ICMPD within the number of projects is also engaged with the Ukrainian authorities on drafting the new migration strategy of Ukraine. And we clearly understand that the return of Ukrainians can accelerate the pace of national economic recovery, bringing the valuable experience and skills and strengthen the communities. It is also necessary to recognize that large-scale return flows, particularly when it is they are concentrated within a short time frame, can exceed the absorption capacity of the local institutions and service providers. Local authorities service systems may struggle to accommodate increased demand for housing, education, healthcare, psychological support, even livelihoods assistance. So for that, all the authorities, also in EU member states, as well as in Ukraine, the border services should get prepared. And this highlights the need for the phased, coordinated and area-based reintegration planning aligned with local capacities and development priorities. This process should be individualized, needs-based, recognizing that one-size-fits-all approaches are really ineffective. And so the protection-sensitive approach across all the stages. We need to also understand that this is very needed that we tailor the local ownership and alignment with local capacities.
If I put myself in that situation, having this condition of extended stay in which I don't know how long I'll be staying, what my future will be, the uncertainty, and being in that position, I imagine not knowing whether to fully invest in my newfound home, to start a family, or on the other hand, simply to operate under the assumption that at any given day, I would have to simply pack my bags and return to Ukraine. It diminishes one's decision-making process. And Anna, I would like your insights on this. From the UCCs, what do our clients say about the idea of return? What are you hearing from our clients?
Yeah, so typically we do see the movement that occurs in both ways. So some people are coming to the Czech Republic, some people are coming back to Ukraine. Yeah, so some individuals return temporarily and others continue still to build their life in the European Union and the Czech Republic in general. So I cannot tell that there is the uniform trend. There is still the big unpredictability that remains really significant, and the return decisions could be really personal. They could depend on a lot of individual circumstances. But what do we see? This is the emotional attachment that people do have still. They do have their families and friends still in Ukraine. And from time to time, we do hear the desire to return one day when it will be safe. So what definitely we need to understand, and what do we see, that the longer people are displaced out of their home country, the more layered choices are. So it's never plain that I want to go back or I don't want to go back. Pretty often it's like the complex question that is really approached individually by every person themselves.
So questions on return are also very layered.
Yes, 100%, because that depends on how well they are adapted in the current country they are living in. So it's layered also in the cultural differences, language specificities, whether the person was able to adapt in the new environment. I would always say that we are receiving the questions on the return to Ukraine, but we cannot influence them.
Of course.
And we still are not recommending them to going back to Ukraine because it's not safe.
Well, what are those questions specifically? When they ask about return, what are they asking?
If they are asking on the return, then typically they are asking, first of all, how to legally finish their status in the Czech Republic, how to close out the bank accounts, how to solve the issues with the health insurance. So this is the typical question, because they do know that they can refer to us when they need to get the local information, but the official one and in their native language.
It also depends on how the question on aspirations for return is placed, at what time it is placed. And I myself, when I'm visiting the centers, I always try to engage with the visitors. And this is where I try to ask people, would you like to return? And the answers are completely different. And elderly people keep saying that, yes, it's their country, it's their land, they want to come back. Some mentioned that, I mean, I came from Mariupol and there is nowhere I can return. It's a desert of ash and destroyed houses. So others, I mean, the mother of two minor kids said that she found a job, kids are at school, and they don't want their children to hear the sound of the air raid alarm anymore. So, all these answers, the most important is for each person, each individual, to make an informed decision at certain point in time. But it's a bit too early to talk about that. We just need to prepare for that. But also people are asking about the logistics of the move, the financial aspects, because people are getting born in other countries and they need just simply passports, the travel documents.
So all this discussion on return naturally would expand the not only the mandate, but also the kind of questions that we anticipate from our UCC clients, whether that's in Prague or in Berlin or Gdansk, or now with the newly opened Düsseldorf and Munich UCCs. But Roman, let me ask you, what's next for the UCCs? Apart from, of course, we have an abstract idea of it will be expanding, but what's next? Are we opening more?
I'm very happy to mention that ICMPD will very soon open the Unity Hub of the Ukrainian Consultation Center in Stockholm. The focus of the center will be also to not only to provide the verified up-to-date information to Ukrainians, but also to provide the space to engage with the cultural events, to work with diaspora.
Thank you, Roman and Anna, for all these stories, for all these, for sharing not only the stories actually, but also the very technical and sometimes sensitive topics that we have touched on today. But I would like to end on a slightly personal note at this point, if you don't mind. But within the headquarters, you are managing several projects. How does this impact the way you manage all of these while, of course, thinking about what's happening to your country?
It's a hard and touchy question, and of course for me it's very difficult to see what's going on now in Ukraine, but when we are talking about the work of our centers, and it's very also good to understand that behind all these statistical figures, each person that comes for help, support, advice, or information, there is a story. There is a story of resilience, striving, story of losses and victories, story of a strong will despite all odds. And that what keeps us and gives us energy to move on and to do this work. And I just really want to thank Anna and her team in Prague, as well as each team member in all our centers, all the colleagues in my team, for their dedication and hard work. They are doing an incredible job, and this motivates.
Thank you, Roman. Speaking of motivation, Anna, you have been with us since the beginning of the centers. And as Roman said, you are all doing fantastic job. But I would like to know, as part of the team that manages the center in Prague, specifically, what motivates you to keep on going?
When you are doing this type of job, you never need to look for motivation. You see the people and they do motivate you, actually. Understanding what is going on in Ukraine right now, the resilience that Ukrainians are showing in the country, and as well as their ability to adapt in the current situation, is at the same time bringing you the huge sense of responsibility, but understanding that you are helping them also is giving you the feeling of the privilege to be here, to be able to help them. Behind every change that is going on in any type of legislations in any country, there is a human that wants to be heard, to be safe, and just to live their life or to better them. So I do see the strengths that my Ukrainian comrades are showing, their strengths, their readiness for all the challenges, and this is actually what I believe is the motivation for each of the colleagues, not only in Prague, but in any center where we are operating.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you, Roman. And again, really from the entire team, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to having such a heartwarming talk. Thank you so much.
Our colleagues Roman Makuka and Anna Kurnitska have just shared with us their increasing work in response to the evolving challenges that Ukrainians face as the war is entering the fifth year. But from questions on the prospects of temporary protection, to often very personal challenges in their host countries, to the possibility of returning home, this uncertainty they face may hold out for as long as no one can foresee. For now, ICMPD's network of the Ukrainian consultation centers will continue to do what they do best, building trust and providing support and information for the displaced Ukrainians and holders of temporary protection status. This has been another episode of ICMPD's The Migration Podcast. Thank you for joining us today, and until next episode.